Welcome to Celebrate Poe, episode 194, Usher Reimagined, Part 1. You might also like to think of this episode as Poe-inspired character names in Mike Flanagan's The Fall of the House of Usher on Netflix. Now, being the week before Halloween, probably the holiday most associated with Poe, I wanted to delve into Mike Flanagan's The Fall of the House of Usher on Netflix, not concentrating a great deal on the plot and definitely not giving away the many twists and turns that make the show so interesting. In other words, I don't want to spoil it for you. I think you'll enjoy it on your own. But the modern-day plot and actions of the characters speak for themselves. So I especially don't want to give away any spoilers, and there's some very good ones. Now, the series revolves around the Usher family, who run Fortunato Pharmaceuticals, a company implicated in the opioid crisis similar to the Sackler family described in episode 193. The series on Netflix begins with the funeral for three of Roderick Usher's children. And as the story unfolds, it appears that someone or something is killing off the Usher offspring at a rapid pace, suggesting a supernatural vendetta. The narrative is broken up into 8 chapters, each named after a Poe tale. And of course, each chapter is a night's episode. Now, the series is more than just a horror story. It's a critique of societal power dynamics and the impunity often enjoyed by the wealthy. It's a blend of gruesome family drama and Edgar Allan Poe's macabre tales, making it an extremely intriguing watch for both horror and drama enthusiasts alike. Well, after a great deal of thought, I came to the conclusion that the best approach for this podcast episode was to focus on the many connections in Mike Flanagan's version to the writings of Edgar Allan Poe. After all, the name of this podcast is Celebrate Poe. Now, this list is not meant to be exhaustive, although I did come up with some connections that I've not seen anywhere else regarding Poe and Flanagan's versions of The House of Usher. So, what follows? Well, the main characters of Flanagan's The Fall of the House of Usher and the origins of their names from Poe's works. To start with, Edgar Allan Poe was a master of coming up with creative names for his characters, names that often added to and clarified the plots of his stories. Mike Flanagan has used many of these Poe-inspired names or titles for his characters, and I'd like to start the main portion of this episode with some of those connections. Roderick and Madeline Usher. Roderick and Madeline Usher are straight out of The Fall of the House of Usher, a story about a dysfunctional family and an eerie mansion, an old home that comes together as almost having human characteristics. By the way, the adult Madeline Usher is played by an incredible actress by the name of Mary McDonnell. Well, hello, Mr. Poe. This is quite a surprise. I was just going through some of the characters from Mike Flanagan's The Fall of the House of Usher and how their names were inspired by your works. The next character I have on my list is Verna. Verna is inspired by the Raven from, not surprisingly, Mr. Poe, your famous narrative poem, The Raven. Verna's name, V-E-R-N-A, is an anagram for the word raven. And since you're here, Mr. Poe, perhaps you could quote sections of your work where those characters appear. Of course, Mr. Bartley. How could I forget the raven? Open here I flung the shutter, when, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas just above my chamber door, perched and sat and nothing more. Then this ebony bird beguiling my fancy into smiling by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou, I said, art sure no craven, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven, wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, Nevermore. Now this, of course, is from my poem, The Raven. Well, thank you, Mr. Poe. Next on my list is C. Auguste Dupin. That's D-U-P-I-N. At the beginning of the first episode, and later throughout the fall of the House of Usher, C. Auguste Dupin interviews Roderick Usher. The name C. Auguste Dupin is from the story The Murders in the Rue Morgue. And then, of course, The Purloined Letter and The Mystery of Marie Roget. His role as an investigator in Flanagan's version is somewhat similar to the role of Dupin in Poe's works. Let me read now, Mr. Bartley, about Mr. Dupin. Residing in Paris during the spring and part of the summer, I there contracted an intimacy with Monsieur C. Auguste Dupin. This young gentleman was of an excellent, indeed of an illustrious family, but by a variety of untoward events had been reduced to such poverty that the energy of his character succumbed beneath it, and he ceased to bestir himself in the world or to care for the retrieval of his fortunes. By courtesy of his creditors, there still remained in his possession a small remnant of his patrimony, and upon the income arising from this, he managed, by means of a rigorous economy, to procure the necessities of life. Books, indeed, were his sole luxuries, and in Paris these are easily obtained. From my story, The Murders in the Rue Morgue. Now, the next character is Pym. A bearded Mark Hamlin, remember him as Luke Skywalker in Star Wars? Well, Mark Hamill plays Pym, P-Y-M, the Usher family fixer, and the Usher family does get into a lot of trouble. Pym is named after the title character of Poe's only novel, The Narrative of Author Gordon Pym. Mr. Poe, what was the full title of the novel? Yes, Mr. Bartley. The Narrative of Author Gordon Pym of Nantucket, comprising the details of a mutiny and atrocious butchery on board the American brig Grampus on her way to the South Seas in the month of June 1827, with an account of the recapture of the vessel by the survivors, their shipwreck, and subsequent horrible sufferings from famine, their deliverance by means of the British schooner Jane Guy, the brief cruise of this latter vessel in the Antarctic Ocean, her capture, and the massacre of her crew among a group of islands in the 84th parallel of southern latitude, together with the incredible adventures and discoveries still farther south to which that distressing calamity gave rise. Well, from what I understand, Mr. Poe, such a long title was common for the 19th century. You might say it served as advertising or a summary of coming attractions. Now, the next character from which there is a Poe reference, that there's a Poe reference for, is Frederick Usher. Frederick Usher, the eldest child of the Usher family, is played by Henry Thomas. Henry Thomas was Elliot in the movie E.T. Listeners of this podcast might like to take a look at his audition for E.T. I think it's real interesting on YouTube. Just go to the transcript or show notes for this podcast episode at celebratepoe.buzzsprout.com for the link to Henry Thomas Edition for E.T. Or you just might want to go to it directly on YouTube. Henry Thomas Audition for E.T. OK Kid, You Got the Job. Or you can just, you know, type OK Kid, You Got the Job into the search bar, and that'll probably get you to it. Anyway, the character's name of Frederick in Mike Flanagan's take on The Fall of the House of Usher comes from Frederick Baron of Metzengerstein. Could you read a section from that for us, Mr. Poe? Certainly, Mr. Bartley. From this date, a marked alteration took place in the outward demeanor of the dissolute young baron, Frederick von Metzengerstein. Indeed, his behavior disappointed every expectation, while his habits and manner offered anything congenial with those of the neighboring aristocracy. He was seldom to be seen at all, never beyond the limits of his own domain. There are few in this social world who are utterly companionless. Yet so seemed he, unless, indeed, that unnatural, impetuous, and fiery-colored horse, which he thenceforward continually bestrode, had any mysterious right to the title of his friend. Numerous invitations on the part of the neighborhood for a long time, however, continually flocked in. Will the Baron attend our excursions? Will the Baron honor our festivals with his presence? Baron Frederick does not hunt. Baron Frederick will not attend, were the haughty and laconic answers. But yes, Mr. Poe, I think you'd agree that if you had seen it, that Frederick and Flanagan's take, and of course the Frederick in your story, could definitely be characterized by their haughty natures. Now, the next character is Marilla, Frederick's wife. Marilla, or Maury Usher, gets her name from the title character of the story, Marilla. Could you read just a very, very brief section from Marilla? Certainly, Mr. Bartley. But one autumn evening, when the winds lay still in heaven, Marilla called me to her bedside. There was a dim mist over all the earth and a warm glow upon the waters, and amid the rich October leaves of the forest, a rainbow from the firmament had surely fallen. "It is a day of days," she said, as I approached, "a day of all days, either to live or die. It is a fair day for the sons of earth and life, ah, more fair for the daughters of heaven and death." I kissed her forehead, and she continued, "I am dying, yet shall I live? Marilla, the days have never been when thou couldst love me, but her whom in life thou dost abhor, in death thou shalt adore. Marilla!" Yes, Lenore. I have read online that the name for Lenore Usher comes from the raven. Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." But that's just part of the story. You see, there's a far lesser poem of four stanzas that Mr. Poe wrote for the Pioneer in 1843, also called Lenore. And some scholars say that it may have served as partial inspiration for the name Lenore in The Raven in 1845. And I have not seen this reference to Lenore from the poem by the same name listed anywhere else as an influence on Mike Flanagan's version. The only one I've seen was Lenore as coming from The Raven. When it first was written by Mr. Poe in 1843. But anyway, would you read that poem, Lenore, for us, Mr. Poe? Ah, yes, Mr. Bartley. Our broken is the golden bowl, the spirit flown forever. Let the bell toll, a saintly soul glides down the Stygian River. And let the burial rite be read, the funeral song be sung, a dirge for the most lovely dead that ever died so young. And Guinevere, hast thou no tear? Weep now or nevermore. See on yon drear and rigid bier, low lies thy love, Lenore. Yon air, whose cheeks of pallid hue with tears are streaming wet, sees only through their crocodile dew a vacant coronet. False friends, ye loved her for her wealth, and hated her for her pride, and when she fell in feeble health, ye blessed her. Then she died. How shall the ritual then be read, the requiem how be sung, for her most wronged of all the dead that ever died so young? But rave not thus, and let the solemn song go up to God so mournfully that she may feel no wrong. The sweet Lenore hath gone before with young hope at her side, and thou art wild for the dear child that should have been thy bride. For her, the fair and debonair that now so lowly lies, the life still there upon her hair, the death upon her eyes. Avaunt tonight, my heart is light, no dirge will I upraise, but wait the angel on her flight with a pæan of her old days. Let no bell toll, lest her sweet soul amid its hallowed mirth shall catch the note as it doth float up from the damned earth to friends above from friends below. The indignant ghost is riven from grief and moan to a golden throne beside the King of Heaven. Well, thank you, Mr. Poe. Now, Camille L. Espagne, Camille L. Espagne, in Mike Flanagan's version, the ushers have a ruthless PR head by the name of Camille L. Espagne. She gets her name from the murders in the Rue Morgue. And would you read a brief section from the murders in the Rue Morgue, Mr. Poe?
Certainly, Mr. Bartley. Extraordinary murders. This morning, about 3 o'clock, the inhabitants of the Quarter Street Rocher were aroused from sleep by a succession of terrific shrieks issuing apparently from the fourth story of a house in the Rue Morgue, known to be in the sole occupancy of one Madame L. Espagne and her daughter, Mademoiselle Camille L. Espagne. After some delay, occasioned by a fruitless attempt to procure admission in the usual manner, the gateway was broken in with a crowbar, and 8 or 10 of the neighbors entered, accompanied by 2 policemen, but by this time the cries had ceased. But as the party rushed up the first flight of stairs, 2 or more rough voices in angry contention were distinguished and seemed to proceed from the upper part of the house. As the second landing was reached, these sounds also had ceased, and everything remained perfectly quiet. The party spread themselves and hurried from room to room. Upon arriving at a large back chamber in the fourth story, the door of which, being found locked with the key inside, was forced open. A spectator presented himself, which struck everyone present not less with horror than with astonishment.
Thank you, Mr. Poe. Now, the next character is Victorine Lafourcade. The name of Victorine Lafourcade comes from the story, The Premature Burial. Could you read a section about that,
Mr. Poe. In the year 1810, a case of living inhumation happened in France, attended with circumstances which go far to warrant the assertion that truth is indeed stranger than fiction. The heroine of the story was a Mademoiselle Victorine La Fourcade, a young girl of illustrious family, of wealth, and of great personal beauty. She wed Monsieur Renel, a banker and a diplomatist of some eminence. After marriage, however, this gentleman neglected and perhaps even more positively ill-treated her. Having passed with him some wretched years, she died. At least her condition so closely resembled death as to deceive everyone who saw her. She was buried, not in a vault, but in an ordinary grave in the village of her nativity. Filled with despair and still inflamed by the memory of a profound attachment, one night the lover journeyed from the capital to the remote province in which the village lies, with the purpose of disinterring the corpse and possessing himself of its luxuriant tresses. He reached the grave. At midnight, he unearthed the coffin, opened it, and was in the act of detaching the hair when he was arrested by the unclosing of the beloved eyes of his Victorine La Fourcade. In fact, the lady had been buried alive. Whoa, Mr. Poe. Okay. Well, thank you very much. And I'd like to move right along to the character named Tamerlane Usher. Tamerlane might be described as a lifestyle influencer, and she gets her name from your poem, Tamerlane, in which the title character is a warlord with a broken heart. Could you read a brief section from Tamerlane for us, please? I reached my home no more, for all was flown that made it so. I passed from out its mossy door in vacant idleness of woe. There met me on its threshold stone a mountain hunter I had known in childhood, but he knew me not. Something he spoke of the old cot. It had seen better days, he said, than rose a fountain. There rose a fountain once, and there full many a fair flower raised its head. But she who reared them was long dead, and in such follies had no part. What was there left me now? Despair? A kingdom for a broken heart. Now, Mr. Poe, there is the character by the name of Bill T. Wilson, who was a fitness instructor in Flanagan's take on your story. I have run across sources who say that he is named after your story, William Wilson, which certainly seems logical. But when I first heard the name, instantly, my first reaction was Bill W. Wilson. You see, the real Bill Wilson was an alcoholic who became one of the most influential persons of the 20th century because he was the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, stay with me on this one. The historical Poe died years before Bill Wilson was even born. But one of Poe's last actions in Virginia before he left for Baltimore at the end of his life was to attend a meeting of the Sons of Temperance, a precursor to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I later found out that the director of The Fall of the House of Usher on Netflix, Mike Flanagan, is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous because of his previous struggles as a practicing alcoholic. Now, according to the Baltimore Edgar Allan Poe website, on August the 27th, 1849, and this was a publication,
that said, on Monday evening, Poe was initiated into the Shaco Hill Division, number 54 of the Sons of Temperance, at the chapter's meeting place on the south side of Broad Street, nearly opposite Brook Avenue. The presiding officer, William J. Glenn, a young tailor, recalls, "Mr. Poe, during his stay here, made his home at the Old Swan Tavern. There was proposed for membership, elected, and initiated. I presided at the meeting and administered the obligation oath to the candidate. There had been to us no intimation that Mr. Poe had violated his pledge to abstain from alcohol before leaving Richmond." Another member of the Usher family is Tamerlane Usher, a lifestyle influencer who gets her name. Now, this is the fitness instructor's wife. And this lifestyle influencer, not surprisingly, gets her name from Tamerlane, in which, again, the title character is a warlord with a broken heart. Not necessarily historically accurate from the real Tamerlane, but this was usually agreed to be Poe's first published work. Now, one of my favorite characters from Mike Flanagan's The Fall of the House of Usher, The Fall of the House of Usher, is named Prospero, or Perry Usher. Perry Usher is a combination of arrogant slash insecure club kid in Flanagan's take on Poe's work. And to say much more would be giving away a fascinating story. Poe's work, and also in Flanagan's, Prospero invites a select group to a masque or festive gathering. And Mr. Poe, could you read a section from the Mask of the Red Death? Oh, certainly, Mr. Bartlett. The Red Death had long devastated the country, but the Prince Prospero was happy and dauntless and sagacious. When his dominions were half depopulated, he summoned to his presence 1,000 healthy friends from among the knights and dames of his court, and with these retired to the deep seclusion of one of his castellated abbeys. This was an extensive and magnificent structure, the creation of the prince's own eccentric yet august taste. A strong and lofty wall girded it in. The wall had gates of iron. The courtiers, having entered, brought furnaces and massy hammers and wielded the bolts. They resolved to leave means neither of ingress or egress to the sudden impulses of despair or frenzy from within. The abbey was amply provisioned. With such precautions, the courtiers might bid defiance to contagion. The external world could take care of itself. In the meantime, it was folly to grieve or to think. The prince had provided all the appliances of pleasure. There were buffoons, there were ballet dancers, there were musicians, there was beauty, there was wine. All these were secure within. Without was the Red Death. Of course, that passage was from my work, The Mask of the Red Death. You know, Mr. Poe, many scholars believe that you were influenced by William Shakespeare's The Tempest due to the fact that your parents were Shakespearean actors. The name Prospero was used almost 400 years before your birth in Shakespeare's play, The Tempest. Many scholars have even pointed out similarities between Shakespeare's Prospero and Poe's Prospero. Near the end of The Tempest, Shakespeare's Prospero gives the famous cloud-capped tower speech. Mr. Poe, would you care to deliver that brief speech?
Certainly, Mr. Bartley. Our revels now are ended. These actors, as I foretold you, were all spirits and are melted into air, into thin air. And like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, yea, all which it inherit, shall dissolve and lack this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep. The Tempest, Act 4, Scene 1. I really like those lines. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep. Well, in the next episode, I plan to have that episode out this week in time for Halloween and continue a look into more references in Flanagan's Usher. And if we're very fortunate, perhaps Mr. Poe will be here. Well, that can certainly be arranged, Mr. Bartley. Well, thank you, Mr. Poe. Sources include The Raven, The Murders in the Rue Morgue, The Narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym of Nantucket, Metzengerstein, Morella, Lenore, The Premature Burial, and The Mask of the Red Death by Edgar Allan Poe. William Shakespeare, Prospero's Farewell Speech from The Tempest, Act 4, Scene 1, and The Fall of the House of Usher, directed by Mike Flanagan for Netflix. Thank you for listening to Celebrate Poe.